Episode number 6 of The Reporter is brought to you by The Great Courses and this course, Thinking About Cybersecurity. You're on the internet every darn day. What is the internet? What does it do? What is it made of? This course, Thinking About Cybersecurity from The Great Courses, will give you an actual layman's terminology explanation of what this darn thing is. And no, it is not a series of tubes. There are billions of us connected to each other through the internet, but since the internet is unregulated, there are threats! Cybersecurity expert Paul Rosenzweig provides a really interesting guide to understanding what the internet is, what cyberspace is, the unique dangers that are emerging, and the ways that experts recognize them and that you can recognize them. The Great Courses has hundreds of lectures on subjects like science, photography, history, a lot of writing courses, art appreciation, mindfulness, all kinds of amazing things. You can watch them on DVD, on your computer, on your DVD player. You can stream them to your smartphone, to your tablet, to your computer, or just listen to the audio as you drive around in your car and expand your brain. And The Great Courses is giving you, Junkie, a nice offer. Get 80% off on a selection of 8 of their best-selling courses, which includes Thinking About Cybersecurity. But this 80% offer is only available for a limited time. I'm not kidding. Honestly, a limited time. So don't wait. Just go check it out. Go to thegreatcourses.com/Sigler. That's thegreatcourses.com/Sigler. That 80% off gets these courses down to $30 or less. You simply cannot go wrong. They are packed with information. You will dig them. I dig them. And now on with our story. Welcome to The Reporter, the Galactic Football League novella, written by Scott Sigler and Murr Lafferty, narrated by Scott Sigler. The Reporter is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic violence. This story, along with all the GFL novellas and novels, is available as a full-length, unabridged, and ad-free digital audiobook download, as an ebook on Kindle, Nook, iTunes, Google Play, and more. To order any version, go to scottsigler.com/thereporter. Hello, Junkies. Welcome to The Reporter episode number 6. We had a big event happen to me right before the Christmas break. I submitted the outline for Alone, which is book 3 of the Generations trilogy. That's out October 24th, 2016, but I have a long way to go on it. I submitted the outline to my editors at Del Rey. The outline alone, single-spaced, was 45 freaking pages long. That, my friends, that is a long outline. And right now, the editors are going over that, and I will be diving headlong into that novel, into writing the drafts. When we get into the new year, when we start 2016, I can't even believe it. It's 2016. I'm still freaking out because 1999 came. And when I was a kid, I watched Space 1999, if you guys remember that show. And I was a little pissed. We didn't have spaceships, personal spaceships for us at that point. But yeah, what are you going to do? The NFL season is almost over, and now the Lions are winning! Oh, for crying out loud. After going 1-7 to start the season, they've been 5-2 since for 6 wins. Hopefully they'll get the 7th win at the end of the season, but they're completely out of the playoffs. It's just the way it goes. But what that means to me is football season is almost over. I'm going to roll right into 2016. It's going to be work, work, workity, work, 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 and then a little bit of work on top of that. I have 2 Del Rey novels coming out in 2016. That is Alight, book 2 of the Generations trilogy, which is out April 5th, and then Alone, as I told you, out in October of 2016. We're also going to have the rewrite of Earthcore available as a full-length audiobook, and it's huge, and as an ebook, and we're going to have GFL novella, The Rider, co-written with Paul E. Cooley, available as an ebook and as a full-length audiobook, and I will be reading the audiobook to The Rider. I will not be reading the audiobook to Earthcore. We're getting someone else to do that for us. So let me pay some bills with our second advertiser this week, then I'm going to get you caught up on the story, and then we're going to break some stuff, by which I mean we're going to listen to The Reporter episode number 6. Our second advertiser this week is MooseJaw.com. MooseJaw.com has winter stuff on sale at up to 50% off, you guys, all through January of 2016. Now, to really capitalize on that, you're going to want to go to scottsigler.com/MooseJaw, because we've got a bunch of codes in there and a big picture for that 50% off sale. Click through that, and then you will see all of the stuff they have on sale in one shot on one big page. And write down the code SIGLER, S-I-G-L-E-R, because that saves you 10% on already discounted merch. That means the boots, the jackets, the hats, the camping gear, the hiking stuff, the ski gear, all the things that are up to 50% off, well, if you buy them, you save an additional 10% off the already up to 50% off with that code SIGLER. So if you have friends who like the outdoorsy lifestyle, email them the page URL scottsigler.com/moosejaw and make sure you tell them about that code SIGLER so they can see the discount codes on that page. They can save big both for the rest of this winter and they can get ahead for next year. Previously on The Reporter. Yolanda Davenport and Y-Corps the Aware's near-death experience had a somewhat happy ending. Thanks to the efforts of Doc Izzy, they both survived the wounds suffered in their crawler encounter. But that does mean that Yolanda owes Tarrant the Smasher yet another favor, for it was Tarrant that sent her to Doc Izzy. After recovering, Yolanda was surprised to learn that Jew Tweedy's mother, the delightful tiny human being known to many as Ma Tweedy, was still in the city of Mattridge. Yolanda and Y-Corps are on their way to interview her. And now, episode 6 of The Reporter. The door to Mrs. Tweedy's apartment was open. A crew of laborers, one heavy key and several workers, was carrying furniture out of the apartment. The heavy key had a refrigerator on his flat back. He was so big he took up most of the hallway. Yolanda tried to get out of his way, but the 12-foot-long creature's black eyes narrowed in anger.
Who's that? Who are you?
His words were deep, gravelly sounds that shot out of the vocal tubes on top of his head. His triangular black teeth clacked inside of his hexagonal mouth. Y-Corps stepped between her and the heavy key and spoke a short stream of syllables. He made his voice sound gravelly, like a human trying to act tough, but he could do nothing about his naturally higher pitch. The heavy key stared at him, blinked a few times, then slid to the side of the hall, giving Y-Corps and Yolanda just enough room to walk by. As Y-Corps passed, he ran his hand along the length of the heavy key's body. The key were all about physical contact. Y-Corps' action was a way of respectfully saying, "Thank you." The heavy key continued down the hall. Yolanda smiled and turned to face Y-Corps. "You speak key? That's the most complicated language in the galaxy just to understand, let alone converse in it. Did you study it when you were younger?"
"I watched a program on the net about key word structure."
"You learned to speak key from watching a documentary?"
"Not all of it," Y-Corps said.
She shook her head, wondering what Y-Corps the Aware might have been had he come out of the egg sack as a leader instead of a worker.
"Miss Davenport, I don't know if it matters, but I recognize that heavy key. He was Lil Akuit, former right tackle for the Orbiting Death. He joined the team in 2680, became a starter in 2681, and lasted 6 games of the Tier 2 season before a leg injury ended his career. He was then convicted of assault and served 2 years in a Mattridge penitentiary."
"So he played with Jew and Miriam?"
"He played with Jew, but not Miriam,"
Y-Corps said.
"Her last season was 2678. She retired, but was still involved with the team, so we can't say if she knew Lila or not."
Yolanda nodded, wondering if that potential connection mattered. She and Y-Corps stood in the apartment's open door. Yolanda rapped smartly on the door, not realizing it was wet with black paint. It stood out like a bruise on her bare knuckles. She smiled at the 4 workers who were packing boxes. "Excuse me, fellas, is Carol Tweedy home?" A tiny older woman peeked out from a hallway deeper in the apartment. She wore an Orbiting Death jersey with Jew Tweedy's former number. She locked eyes on Yolanda. At least Yolanda thought she locked eyes. The woman's face seemed frozen in a perpetual squint. Carol Tweedy walked forward, rushing past the workers. Yolanda saw that the death jersey was streaked with paint and dirt. The woman was wearing it as a work shirt, something she didn't mind getting dirty. Even though Yolanda had seen holos of this woman, Mrs. Tweedy's size seemed shocking in person. How could someone this tiny have birthed two huge professional football players? Yolanda smiled her best reporter smile. Mrs. Tweedy, I'm Yolanda Davenport, and I'm... She saw the punch coming, but not in time to do anything about it. The next thing Yolanda knew, the back of her head hit the floor.
I'd apologize for hitting you, Missy, but I'm honestly not very sorry.
Yolanda kept the ice pack pressed to her jaw as she nodded. Carol Tweedy was clearly polite and clearly happy with the punch. The woman poured iced tea from a pitcher into two glasses. She set it down and sat on the couch next to Yolanda, then pulled the flask out of her pocket and poured a dollop of an amber fluid first into her glass, then Yolanda's.
There, honey, the woman said. That'll put you right.
Yolanda touched her jaw gingerly and winced at the bruise blossoming there. Apparently, Y-Corp had quickly explained that they weren't there to get more nasty dirt, as Carol Tweedy had said.
Drink your tea, honey.
Yolanda did, and winced a little at the strength of the alcohol.
Mrs. Tweedy, the information... Call me Ma. Everyone does.
Yes, okay, well, Ma Tweedy... The information I had initially for the article was reliable, but I've since learned more that makes my findings, perhaps questionable?
Ma Tweedy nodded curtly.
Of course your findings are questionable. I didn't raise my boys to beat up women. At least, not off the football field. One of them want to tear up a scorno or knock the kneecaps off a heavy jig girl on the field? Well, that's just football.
Yolanda nodded.
I'm currently looking for any information I can get on the situation to find out who really killed Grace McDermott and, in turn, who framed your son.
Ma Tweedy squinted her eyes even tighter.
And this article will make Jew look like the good boy he is?
If that's what the evidence says, yes. I'm not here to prove him innocent unless he is, understand? But clearly there are some puzzling pieces that I'm missing.
Clearly, Ma Tweedy said. Can I refresh your drink or your ice pack?
Yolanda passed over the ice pack she'd been holding to her swollen jaw. Ma Tweedy got up and went to the kitchen, dodging the laborers who continued to move the final boxes out of the apartment. The couch and the table in front of it, apparently, would be the last to go. Yolanda took another sip of the tea. She couldn't place the liquor in the glass, but guessed it had human origins. It tasted almost, but not quite, like bourbon. With iced tea, it was odd, but she wasn't one to turn down a hostess's gift while interviewing. The basics of etiquette stretched even to invasive interviews, and one always got further being polite than being aggressive or rude. Well, not always, but most of the time. She felt a pedipalp on her forearm.
Do not forget the painkillers,
Y-Corp said.
I would suggest you do not consume any more of that beverage.
Yolanda nodded. She might have forgotten that and drank herself into a stupor out of politeness. Ma Tweedy returned with a fresh ice pack wrapped in a towel.
Thanks, Yolanda said, as she took it and pressed it to her jaw. You have ice packs stockpiled or something?
Ma smiled.
Special freezer for 'em. Force a habit, really. When you have little boys like Julius and Jonathan, you learn to stock up on first aid supplies.
Are the boys terribly competitive? Yolanda asked, delighted to have this opening.
Ma sniffed.
Two boys, both big and strong, both loving football, both getting onto tier two teams that play against each other? Tell me, Miss Davenport, do you think they're competitive?
Obviously, but there's competitive... And then there's outright jealousy.
Ma Tweedy waved a hand in annoyance.
Oh, you know how my boys are. They love each other deeply. How they show that love is up to them. Sometimes, I swear, I want to hit them in the head with a pipe, but what can you do?
Yolanda wasn't sure if that was a metaphor or if Ma Tweedy actually wanted to hit the boys.
She sure wasn't shy about throwing a punch. Did the boys ever play pranks on each other? Maybe jokes that could turn dangerous or, you know, setups to get the other one in trouble?
Missy, I hope you're not hinting that sweet Jonathan somehow managed to set up Julius in this horrible mess or suggesting that I was able to teach one boy to respect women but not the other one. And I really hope that you're not looking to clear my youngest son's name by implicating my eldest, because if that's the case, I believe I already told you I have a stockpile of ice packs.
Yolanda shifted the ice pack on her face as if it might help block the next punch for Ma Tweedy's tiny yet powerful fist.
I'm trying to find the truth, ma'am, not go off implications. I need to know about your boys, and the Kraken's owner is keeping the team close to him.
As well he should, Ma Tweedy said. With people like you sniffing around, Missy, I'm not surprised Greedox keeps his players close.
The mention of Greedox's name made Yolanda's anger flare, but Ma Tweedy had nothing to do with that.
Your son, Jew, was seen fleeing the scene of a brutal murder, Yolanda said. He had means, motive, and opportunity to commit the crime. He fled law enforcement and signed with a team that could get him off planet and keep him protected. If you want to help me show he's innocent, it's going to take more than you being upset with me for the first story.
Ma Tweedy sighed.
Miss Davenport, let me tell you a secret. Can this be off the record?
If she had a credit for every time someone asked her that question.
Yes, Yolanda said. Off the record.
Ma Tweedy set her half-empty glass of tea down on the table.
I love my son Jonathan more than you could ever know unless you have a child of your own. Along with his brother, Jonathan is my heart and my soul. Jonathan and Quentin risked multi-million credit careers, not to mention their lives, to rescue an innocent man from certain death. If you call Jonathan anything in your next article, you call him what he is, a hero.
She picked up the glass, took a sip, then set it back down.
That being said, my Jonathan isn't smart enough to manage a setup like you suggest. To arrange the murder of Grace, then frame his brother, then spirit his brother off-planet? Jonathan is brave and loyal to a fault, but he's not exactly a criminal mastermind capable of killing a woman, even if that woman did have it coming.
Excuse me?
That trollop McDermott. Can you believe her dating both Fulani and my boy? And a few others, from what I understand. Where I'm from, you choose your lovers, men or women, and you stick with that.
Yolanda blinked.
So, homosexuality is not a problem, but bisexuality is?
You can't have the cake, eat it, and deliver it to the church social all at the same time.
Ma Tweedy took another sip of tea. Yolanda stared at her, failing to follow the exact meaning of the euphemism, but clearly understanding the sentiment. The heavy key who seemed to be in charge of the movers approached them and grunted a string of syllables at Ma Tweedy.
Thank you for your hard work, Ma Tweedy said.
This tiny human woman understood key? First Y-Cor, now Ma Tweedy. Yolanda felt a little bit dumb. Ma Tweedy stood and touched the key on his shoulder.
Will I see you tomorrow?
He grunted an affirmative noise and turned and barked a command to his crew. They headed out quickly. The tiny human woman sat and smiled.
Lil Ocuit is such a hard worker. I hope he can find work after I leave here for good.
You don't mind having an ex-con work for you?
Ma Tweedy shook her head.
Really, Missy, are you that judgmental? Lil is a good boy who made a bad choice. He blocked for my Julius. He and Julius were friends. Still are. Twice there were bar fights. Maybe my Julius caused those, maybe not. And Lilla defended his teammate off the field as aggressively as he did on it. When Lilla got out and needed work, the Death Booster Club and I found him work.
A heavy key with a personal debt to the Tweedy family? But why would you do that? Why is his life your concern?
Because Lil' is family, Ma Tweedy said. Family isn't genetics or species, Miss Davenport. Family is the people who would fight for you and who you would fight for. Lil' took care of my son, so I will take care of him as much as I can.
A heavy key could have done the damage to Grace. Yolanda would have Wycor look up Lil' record.
Well, I'm glad you were able to help him, Yolanda said. Ma, can you tell me more about the relationship between Jew and Grace McDermott?
Ma sighed. I don't know much about that trollop. She was a singer, or a dancer, or some other job that you get for being born with a nice body and a lack of virtue. I knew seeing her would get Julius in trouble, but he loved her, I guess, and whatever makes my son happy, I have to try and accept. So I tried to love her, too. I didn't do a very good job at that, but I did try.
I see, Yolanda said. You told me earlier you taught your boys to respect women. I'm just wondering who else might have taught them things. Is there a Mr. Tweedy?
Ma laughed long and loud.
Well, I didn't spawn the boys all by myself now, did I? Of course they had a father. Tweedy is my name, though. That piece of awful left me when the boys were 5 and 3, and we have been just fine without him since.
Do you think the boys have been in touch with him?
Ma's eyes got steely.
No. They would tell me if he contacted them. When they both went into football, I said to them, "Now, boys," I said, "you better be ready for the worms to come out of the wood. Family you never knew you had will approach you with their hands out. Gimme, gimme, gimme. You boys be smart about all that money, you hear me?"
Yolanda nodded. And what did they say?
They said, "Yes, Ma," like they always do, of course. What do you think they would say?
So no one has approached them?
Oh, sure. My nephew, a cousin I never knew, and apparently someone claiming to be a half-brother. But their father has had the common decency to stay the hell away.
I understand, Yolanda said. How has Jew been acclimating to his role on the Krakens? I remember an odd exchange between he and Barnes at the end of last season.
Ma waved her hand.
Boys will be boys. They all gotta pee on the fire hydrant and say, "I did it first." Got it worked out, I suppose. They stayed in Tier 1, didn't they?
Yolanda granted that they did.
So the Krakens have welcomed him to the team?
Ma grinned.
Like I said, they stayed in Tier 1, didn't they? They wouldn't be there without my Julius, so I think they've welcomed him just fine.
The woman paused.
Missy, it seems to me you're fishing for a way to justify that my son could have killed that woman. Like he has jealousy issues, rage issues, fights with his brothers, his teammates, that kind of thing.
Yolanda leaned back, surprised, but she nodded.
It seems to me all of the things you just said are true, are they not?
Ma Tweedy stood.
I'll be right back. I have a box in the bedroom, something I want to show you.
She walked down the hall.
Yolanda whispered to Wycor,
"You're getting this, right?"
"Of course, Miss Davenport."
Ma came back. She carried a picture frame. She set the frame on the table, then sat and poured herself a fresh glass of tea, complete with a dollop from the flask. The frame showed a looping holo of a much younger Jew Tweedy, maybe 16 years old, standing next to a beautiful horse. Jew was all smiles, showing off a blue ribbon.
"I raised the boys on Thomas 3. Outside of the cities, there's more land than sentients know what to do with. We lived on a farm. Lots of people don't know Julius was quite an equestrian growing up. I bought him that horse when he was 14 years old. He called the horse Thor. He loved that colt."
She picked up the frame and held it in her lap. A sad smile played at the corners of her mouth.
"Julius was showing him at the local farm shows. He won this ribbon, and in the next event, the horse threw a shoe and broke his leg.
We couldn't afford the kind of vet who could fix it. And even if we could, people didn't have that kind of technology out in the boonies. I told Julius that we had to end Thor's pain. He cried so much. But it was time for him to become a man. He asked if he could be the one to do it. The vet gave him a syringe that would end Thor's life painlessly. Julius knelt next to that horse, spoke so sweetly to him. Julius actually calmed the horse down, if you can believe that, although the horse was in agony. Miss Davenport, there ain't no pain like seeing your man-child son's heart be ripped right out of his chest. Ju tried to use that syringe, but he just couldn't do it. He asked me to do it for him. I did.
She sniffed and wiped away a tear, then held the frame tight to her chest.
You tell me, Missy, if a boy doesn't have it in him to take away the pain of an animal he loves, do you really think he could beat a human he loves to death?
Moved as she was by the woman's tenderness, Yolanda didn't point out that the horse hadn't likely angered Jew, while McDermott very well could have. She touched the woman's shoulder and smiled.
Thank you for your time, Ma Tweety. You've given us a look at Jew that we didn't expect to find.
Ma put down the photo and smiled back at her.
My pleasure, dear. You work hard on your story. Like I tell the boys, work hard and good things will come.
Yolanda stood and walked toward the door. Then an idea hit her. Miriam and Jew had played football together, and at least Jew had played with Lila. Maybe Ma Tweety would know if Jew and Miriam had been in contact. She called up a picture of Miriam on the message board and held it up for Ma Tweety to see.
Ma, do you recognize this woman?
Of course. That's the Connor girl. She was a friend of my Julius. A decent fullback, but nothing special in the blocking department, if you ask me. Too bad she's not very good at her job.
How do you know she wasn't good at her job?
Ma stared at Yolanda as if the younger woman were stupid.
Because Grace is dead. Isn't a bodyguard supposed to keep her clients alive?
Yolanda's heart hammered in her chest.
Ma Tweety, you're saying that Miriam Connor was a bodyguard of Grace McDermott?
Ma nodded.
Yes. Once I cooked dinner for Jew and Grace, and sometimes I would meet them out, and Miriam was always around. Last time I saw her guarding Grace was, let me see here, maybe a week before the murder.
Thank you, Ma Tweety.
The woman nodded her little head.
Of course, dear. Good luck.
Yolanda and Wycor left the apartment and headed for the wheel truck that would take them back to the hotel.
Damn it, Miriam. You were holding out on me.
Their suite at the Peking Hotel had filled with lines of light, glowing messages, and the floating heads of the sentients involved with the case. Yolanda finished moving all of her notes from the message board to Y-Corps' ad hoc holoprojector. The living room was a sea of faces. Grace, Jew, Anna Valani, Miriam, Lil Ocuit, Joey Clark, Rigot the Smooth, Parmot the Insane, Tarot the Smasher, Commissioner Rob Frost, Carol Tweedy and her son, John, Quentin Barnes, Greedock the Splithead, Merrick the Covetous, and even Turon the Ugly. She set the message board down on the table.
There, she said. Now we can get started.
Wycor looked at the messy hologram.
So you understand this? This system works for you?
It works for me, she said. I don't have your memory. And even if I did, I have to look at these notes to get a sense of who is connected to who else, timelines, and other things.
She stepped into the middle of the room. There floated a smiling Grace McDermott. She had been so beautiful. It was easy to see why men and women had fallen for her.
Yolanda reached out with her pointer finger and drew a line of yellow light around Grace's head.
At the center of everything, Grace McDermott.
She put two fingers on a floating note showing Grace's bio and slid it closer to the face.
High profile, kept woman, girlfriend of gangsters and running backs.
Yolanda drew a red line from Grace to an image of Anna Villani and circled Villani.
Grace was the paramour of an underling of Sicca the Death, an underling that killed Sicca to take over the syndicate.
She drew another red line from Grace to Jew Tweedy and another circle.
Grace started dating Jew. Maybe she left Villani, maybe not. Jew had access to Grace's apartment because he lived there, and Villani had access, of course, because she owned the building. Which makes Villani and Jew the obvious suspects,
Wycor said.
Both of whom, incidentally, are untouchable.
Yolanda took a step to the right, to Miriam's picture.
And here we have my friend and former bodyguard, Miriam Connor.
She drew a red circle around Miriam.
Connor found the body and could have done the crime, possibly at the behest of Villani. Villani would have given Connor access to Grace's apartment, if Connor even needed it,
Wycor said.
If she was Grace's bodyguard, she could have knocked, been recognized, and walked right in.
Yolanda turned back to Jew's face.
Tweedy arrives at the apartment to find Grace dead. Maybe he came at a specific time each day. Maybe he was called there. If he didn't kill McDermott, he sees the body and is smart enough to immediately know how it looks. So he runs. And the neighbors see him leaving the building.
She nodded.
Right. So he could have killed her, or this could have been part of a bigger setup to get him there at the right time. That means Miriam could still be the killer. She owed Villani. But here's the thing we never thought of until this afternoon.
She walked three steps to the left and put a red circle around Lil Acuit, then another around Carol Tweedy, and drew a line between them.
Ma Tweedy, Yolanda said. She hates the girl her son is dating. Lila owes the family, so Ma sends him to kill McDermott. It must be the medicine,
Wycor said. She turned to look at him.
What? The medicine! Or the alcohol, or possibly both,
he said.
Or perhaps you are as tired as you look. Do you really think that Carol Tweedy is capable of sending a heavy key assassin to kill her youngest child's mate? Or that she would ask a family friend to commit murder?
Yolanda's eyes felt heavy despite the high level of excitement.
I am tired.
She stared at Ma Tweedy's picture. But we can't rule her out, Wycor.
Fine. The next thing you will tell me is that you have Commissioner Rob Prosa's face up there because he is also a suspect.
Maybe he's more involved than we think, she said. The galaxy loves the Krakens, or did until my story. Putting the league's best running back on a team with its best rags-to-riches quarterback? If a Purist Nation player dominates the league, Wycor, that brings in a lot of new viewers. You know they don't even legally show GFL games in the Purist Nation, right?
Of course I know that. Your hastily concocted set of connections falls apart, however, when you think of how close Villani came to capturing Jew Tweedy and executing him. And do you think that the commissioner would send that rags-to-riches quarterback of whom you speak into danger to rescue the league's best running back? That is illogical.
She chewed on her lip. Yeah, you're right.
I can assure you, Miss Davenport, that the commissioner is genuine in his desire to discover the truth.
Yolanda cocked an eyebrow at him. His eye turned light green.
But you would expect me to say that, wouldn't you?
Buddy, I appreciate you getting my back through this, but you haven't let me forget who your real boss is. So don't expect me to forget now.
You have a point. How about if I say I know of no reason he would put you on the wrong trail?
Yolanda shrugged, thinking that Wycor's assurance didn't help much. She was reaching for connections, and she knew it.
What was she missing?
Okay, Wycor, you've shot down my two new theories, so what do you think?
Wycor smoothed the striped fur on his pedipalps.
I believe our best suspect remains Miriam Connor. We both agree that she was lying about something related to finding McDermott's body. And Tarrant the Smasher did not give you Carol Tweedy's name. He specified Miriam as a lead.
Tarrant. There was something there. Something that she was missing. She turned back to her sea of light. She found Tarrant's face. She circled him in blue.
Miss Davenport, I know Tarrant's permanent residence is in Mannerch, but you're not going to list him as a suspect now, are you?
She shook her head.
No, suspects are in red. Tarrant is in blue.
What does blue mean?
It means I should have asked more questions. You're right, Wycor. He did put us on the trail of Miriam, and that did give us more information, but all this time I've missed something important. How did Tarrant know about Miriam?
Wycor stared and blinked.
Perhaps he has access to the police reports?
She shook her head.
I didn't see the autopsy results, but I did see the police report, and Miriam wasn't on it.
Could Tarrant have known Joey Clark and Regat the Smooth? Could they be sources for him? Or perhaps he knew that Miriam was a bodyguard for Grace.
Maybe, Yolanda said. But I feel like we're missing something. I need to talk to him. Can you set that up?
I can try, Miss Davenport, but he will be preparing for the galaxy's greatest sports show game day coverage of the Orbiting Death and the Toe Pirates. From what little I know of Tarrant, he is difficult to reach when he is preparing for broadcasting. You have his personal number. Can you call him?
That was a good idea. She lifted her hand, activating her palm-up display, but paused before she called. Tarrant was a fellow journalist. The GGSS was the most watched sports show in the galaxy. Tarrant had also saved their lives by steering them toward Doc Izzy after the crawler fight.
Wycor, just put in a request through the proper channels, Yolanda said. I don't know exactly what to ask him yet. I have to respect his job, as I would expect him to respect mine.
Very well, Miss Davenport. And what do you think of my assertion that Miss Connor is the most likely suspect?
Yolanda shook her head.
I still don't think so. I know her. But that doesn't change the fact that she lied to us. I need to talk to her.
It would not be wise to return to her residence,
Wycor said.
That would expose you and possibly bring attention to her.
Yolanda thought, then snapped her fingers.
The game! She said she never misses a game, right?
That is correct. She has season tickets.
I can talk to her there.
There will be over 100,000 sentients at Beefeater Gin Stadium. Will that not expose you to danger?
This might sound strange, but no, not at a game, she said. Once I show my face at the stadium, if anything happens to me, it's on Villani. If other reporters see me, I don't think she'll touch me.
Wycor thought for a moment.
Yes, you may be right. But if you are seen talking to Miss Connor, does that not put her in danger?
He was right.
Maybe I could get into the locker room and talk to her there.
If I may, Miss Davenport, you could use Commissioner Frost's private skybox. He has one at every stadium so he can watch games in peace.
No one will be using that?
I will see to it that it is at our disposal. If you could direct Miss Connor there, you could meet in private and no one would know.
Yolanda smiled. That might work out perfectly.
You said this hotel has shielded communications?
It does,
Wycor said.
Not even the GFL's operatives have been able to crack calls in or out of this hotel.
Then it should be safe to call Miriam. Call her, please.
Wycor did. The holotanks were tied up, so he called on the message board. After a few rings, a holo of Miriam's face floated above the device.
Yolanda,
she said.
What can I do for you?
We need to talk, Yolanda said.
Seems there were some things you didn't tell me. Miriam shook her head.
Yes, now is not a good time.
She looked somewhere to the right, then turned her eyes back to Yolanda. The heavy Jew woman looked upset, and well she should. She had been caught in a lie.
Miriam, I know you're going to the game tomorrow.
Miriam shrugged.
So?
I need to talk to you there.
The woman paused.
Okay, where?
Just go to Will Call. I will leave a ticket for you there with instructions on where to meet me.
Miriam just stared. She looked so angry.
All right,
she said.
If that's what you want, I'll see you tomorrow.
Her face vanished. Yolanda leaned back in her chair.
Miss Davenport, if I may, I would like to procure a press pass for Miss Connor. In case something goes wrong and you are not able to have privacy in Commissioner Frost's booth, you might be able to get in some other restricted area of the stadium and have your conversation.
That was a good idea. The stadium would be full with well over 100,000 sentients, but Beef Eater Gin Stadium security ran a tight ship. A press badge was damn near an all-access pass. The passes were so hard to get that, most times, stadium security didn't even look at them. Just having one showed that you were someone important.
Then you better get one for yourself, Yolanda said. If we have to think on our feet, I don't want to have to explain why two of us have press passes and one has league credentials.
I do not think league credentials would be an issue, but I can arrange for a pass to be waiting for Miss Connor at Will Call, and I will obtain one for myself as well. Now, if I may, Miss Davenport, perhaps you should get some sleep. I will be sure to wake you in time for the game. Would you like anything specific for breakfast?
She nodded. Think you can find a shushalik-filled donut? His eyes swirled with blue-violet.
Of course. I will procure you the best shushalik-filled donut Madge has to offer.
That eye color, she said. Blue-violet? I've never seen that.
I do apologize if I allowed my emotions to show, Miss Davenport.
She laughed.
After all we've been through, I wouldn't worry about it. But that color, what is it?
I believe that would be disgust, he said. I had thought stewed sea maggots were the worst thing one could order. I was incorrect.
She rolled her eyes and shuffled to her bedroom. A good night's sleep in a highly protected hotel would set her right. Tomorrow would be a big day.
That's it for this week. Be on the lookout for our newsletter, which comes out Wednesday, December 30th. If you're not signed up for our newsletter, just go to scottsigler.com, look for the newsletter, sign up in the upper right-hand corner, sign up there, or go to scottsigler.com/newsletter. We put them out roughly once a month, giving you all the news that's fit to print about the Siglerverse. So on December 30th, we're going to have a fun announcement in there. And also coming up this week, our Friday Fix Year in Review is coming on Friday, January 1st. The Year in Review is the annual event where A Real Girl and I cover all the things that we did during the last 12 months. In this case, what we did during 2015, covering all the books and the cons and all the travel and all the cool stuff we get to do in this job. And we let you know what books and events are coming out in 2016. So you're going to want to be around for that. That will be up at scottsigler.com on Friday, January 1st. I will see you right here next Sunday for The Reporter, episode number 7, and I will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to The Reporter, a Galactic Football League novella, written by Scott Sigler and Mer Lafferty, narrated by Scott Sigler. For more information on Scott Sigler and for more free stories from this author, go to scottsigler.com. The Reporter was produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Copyright 2015, Empty Set Entertainment. Theme music is the song Heaven's Alive by the band Lacuna Coil.